show you the first chart. And the first chart is the U.S. as how U.S. Our states ranked by percentage of minorities. And where the arrow goes down, it will show you Maryland, that we're now 41st, 41% of our state population. We're tied with Mississippi, which also has 41. And we are the fifth state in the nation in the growing number of minorities. And it is said by 2010, we'll have about 50%. This other slide shows you the percentage of population that is racial and ethnic minority by jurisdiction in Maryland. I don't know how good you can see those numbers from way back there, but we one of the dark areas show you that we're over 30% of minorities that that live in those particular jurisdictions. We have 23 jurisdictions, counties, and one and Baltimore City, which make 24 jurisdictions. And those are the areas that you can see that. And one of the things that I'm excited about as you look at the percentage, as a legislator, what it does is tells me to look at my area that I represent, and I can tell exactly how many minorities that are in my area. I can also go beyond there and find out what diseases impact those minorities. And so it is crucial. I cannot no longer say to somebody else's problem. I can buy into it. I know exactly what needs to be done. I can quickly tell you about my legislation. The Department of Health and Mental Hygiene, Office of Minority Health and Health Disparities. In 2004, my legislation and that of the Senate cross-filed with the Senate House Bill 177 officially established the Maryland Office of Minority Health and Health Disparities. And it was established in the Office of the Secretary of the Department of Health and went into effect in October 2004. Prior to that, in 2003, my bill again created the legislative, during that legislative session, we had House Bill 883, which paved the foundation for the Maryland Healthcare Disparity Initiatives that is interwoven into House Bill 86. And again, it also established the Health Disparity Prevention Plan for the state. Of course, it has been tweaked, and now we have an excellent plan for our state. The final slide brings you to House Bill 1455. This in 2006 session requires the Maryland Department of Health and Mental Hygiene to provide technical assistance to qualified community-based hospitals for a pilot program that addresses, one, cultural competency. We also do a little of health literacy as well. Training with the healthcare providers with an emphasis on community-based providers. And two, health outcomes in the community-based model for targeting specific health outcomes. And the whole genesis of me introducing this piece of legislation was because I listened to a conversation between FQACs, and one of the physicians kind of threw it out to the doctors, and she said to the other FQAC, she said, I would love to see how many of you can begin to look at your diabetic patients and your pre-diabetic patients and begin to see how you can bring those hemoglobin A1C down. I said, if they could throw out the kind of plan and challenge to begin to work against that, then the hospital and a community-based hospital that have a teaching program should be able to do that and do more. And so with that, we not only did that, but we also are looking at their BMI index for the obesity, we're looking at their cholesterol level, the PSA for the prostate cancers, and I could go on in telling you all the different areas that we really want them to zoom in on. So at that time, I will stop, and I will allow Dr. Mittman to tell you exactly what's been going on with this pilot program. Dr. Mittman.
Good afternoon. OK, Okay, no, I don't need to convince you that cultural competency training is important, but as we saw earlier, linguistic and literacy access is very important. We have 53 million Americans that speak languages that are other than English. There is one in three Americans that are ethnic or racial minorities, one in 12 that has limited English proficiency. They may speak English but not understand it well enough to deal with the healthcare system. There are issues of discrimination, bias, and prejudice that do contribute to healthcare disparities, as the Institute of Medicine has shown us. Culturally responsive healthcare has many benefits. Cultural competency is now a core requirement of many national licensing and accreditation bodies, and there are already a few states that have mandated cultural competency training, starting with New Jersey, California, Washington, and many others are trying to follow suit. There are many benefits to cultural competence that range from greater quality of provider-patient communications, more successful patient education, increase in patient health-seeking behaviors, increase in participation in preventive measures, greater adherence to treatment regimen, reduction in presentation for care at acute visits, fewer diagnostic errors, and overall better health outcomes. Just like with many other issues, we have talked about lack of literacy assessment tools that are where we have consensus and validation. The same thing happens with means to actually do cultural competency training and accurate means to assess their efficacy. The National Quality Forum recently unleashed a report calling for various states and individuals to report on an infrastructure for cultural competency training and diversity care in healthcare. And they said that efforts to define culturally competent care are already in progress, but significant knowledge gaps exist about the direct relationship between cultural and linguistic competence and improved health outcomes. So that was basically the rationale behind putting together this legislation. And basically, the main idea behind that was to try to illustrate that with increasing the cultural competence of healthcare providers, we can increase the better health for our patients and improve the health outcomes in a measurable way, as if we could measure the hemoglobin A1C levels, so BMIs, before and after, and with a comparison group of people who are seen by a basic educational cultural competency and those as compared to those with enhanced cultural competency training, trained physicians. To do that, we partnered with three community-based hospitals in the state of Maryland. All are serving medically underserved areas. We developed an online survey for residents and teaching faculty that focuses on internal medicine. We pilot tested the survey in internal medicine residency programs in all three participating hospitals. We intend to conduct in the future focus groups based on those findings from the survey to house staff, curriculum developers, teachers. And we plan to implement a best practice cultural competency curriculum and then follow patients' health indices based on a control group of physicians and the patients and that has enhanced training. The methodology was that we had a convenient sampling of the three hospitals that we already had ongoing relationship with and partnered with before. The analysis of the survey is basically predominantly descriptive right now because our numbers are too small to do comparisons, but in future when the numbers increase, we will do bivariate and multivariate analysis, and we will try to do regression models where we can put in the cultural competency weighting of the physicians. The survey is online using SurveyMonkey, and it's composed of participant demographics, assessment of existing cultural competency training, measure of attitudes and perceptions related to cultural competency training based on a four-point like a scale going from strongly disagree to strongly agree, and knowledge of national and state guidelines pertaining to cultural competency. We, as of now, had about 38 participants, and we see that the vast majority are female. We see that the vast majority are residency one and two programs, and the vast majority are minorities. But we also know that the participating hospitals are predominantly minorities in the residency programs, so it's a representative sample. What we have seen is with respect to the question of is cultural competency training mandatory in my hospital, a great deal of confusion, and we can see that in Hospital B, just about 50% of individuals think that it is mandated, 37.5% think that yes, and the rest are unsure. So pretty much in the same hospital, many people do not know what actually is going on with respect to cultural competency training. We have found that the vast majority of people, actually 100% agree that it's important. Very few say that it's difficult to implement. Everybody thinks that it will improve providers' cultural competency to be trained. Only 65% are satisfied with existing practices in the hospitals. 90% feel that there is evidence that it will enhance outcome. 100% believe that it will increase the quality of care. And basically, very, very few think that it should be acquired and that cultural competency cannot be taught. So basically, people are very amenable to this kind of training and think that it is important. The leading way of teaching it was a third and web-based method, and the rest was didactic workshops and seminars. The findings are showing that there is apparent confusion about requirements related to cultural competency training, even in the same institution. The vast majority of respondents were unsure about licensing and accreditation bodies, that there were no statistically significant differences between the responses of minorities and non-minority respondents at this time. And I think that that is important. And again, the vast majority of residents feel that it is important to do and doable. Basically, it's important that medical residents in our we see that the residents in our survey population agree with the importance of the training and reject the notion that it is too difficult to do. There is uncertainty about institutional policies. And teaching faculty and residency directors must be clear about cultural competency requirements in the institution and move to implement this training, because we see that the residents feel that this is feasible. These are the references. This is information pertaining to our office. I would like to acknowledge the fact that this work would have not been possible without the vision and dedication of our legislature in Maryland, and you've heard from Delegate Nathan Pulliam already. There are many skillful individuals from my office, from my team, who are present with us today. And certainly it would not have been possible without the federal government. We do have a grant from them to work on assessment issues on cultural competency and diversity, and also for cultural competency training and workforce diversity. That's the Office of Minority Health. Thank you all very much.